Rodney's Perspective, A Stillness So Right, and A Little Outdoor Music, Parts 2, 3, and 4 of the A Farm in Iowa Verse by Shea Ferotherden. Rating ranges from teen and up to explicit. Pairing, Rodney McKay, John Shepherd. Read by Library Chick 94. Rodney's Perspective. It was a matter of some wonder to him later in life, but Rodney didn't realize he was falling in love with another man until the second movement of a string quartet concert in Iowa, and the elderly grandmother sitting on his left, and John sitting quietly at his right. Everything smelled vaguely of peppermints that evening. The grandmother had unwrapped 6 or 7 of the things, laid them on her lap, sucked them methodically as the air in the auditorium shimmered with the music of space, and suddenly, between a dimming innuendo and the trembling beauty of a captured cork, Rodney realized John was tall and warm and ridiculously, unspeakably beautiful in his jeans and his work boots and his white shirt and his jacket. And God, God, he'd wanted to reach out for his hand. He didn't. Hand reaching, hand holding, was not something you launched upon rural carpenter roof-fixing pilots, he decided. But as the unbearably fragile music of photons slid into his blood, he could barely breathe for curiosity about the way John's hand would feel, if his fingertips would be calloused, if his palm was damp or dry. The music ended, and Rodney gestured helplessly when John asked if he liked it, and his gut did something crippling and strange when John ducked his head and smiled. This was unprecedented, Rodney thought at 100 miles an hour, staring out through the passenger window of the truck as John drove them back to his farm. This was male and new and a little like food poisoning and a lot like slotting an equation into place. And he was drunk on it, gleeful, giddy, terrified, and when they parked and tumbled out into an Iowa night, Rodney couldn't help himself, reached up and kissed him, shivered head to toe at the touch of John's tongue. He wanted to say, "Jesus Christ, I've been falling for you for months now, haven't I? And what the fuck am I doing? And please, please, please choose me back." But he settled for touching the wash of John's naked back, tangling their legs, arching up into the weight of John's body, and coming with a broken shout that meant everything, forever, was irrevocably new. Falling, fallen, fell, felled, he thought, curved into the loose heat of John's embrace, listening to John's breath smooth itself into glad and sated sleep. And he slept too, nothing comprehensible, everything trembling, and somewhere in the night reached for John's hand. The end. A Stillness So Right. John doesn't really know what makes him do it, why, after gingerly peeling himself up off the grass, eyeing the distance from the porch roof to the ground, and estimating his chances of a ruptured spleen, he goes inside and calls Rodney. There are 100 other things he could be doing, finding the goddamn ibuprofen for one, or tracking someone else to come and finish the shingles before the next storm rolls in. But he calls Rodney, like it's sensible, like it's what you do when you've fallen 14 feet onto your ass and done something dumb to your shoulder. Rodney's waspish when he answers. "McKay." "Hey." There's a pause at the end of the line, and John can all but see Rodney blinking, pulling his brain back from whatever complicated thing he was doing and engaging with the real world again. "John?" "I fell off the roof." As conversation starters go, it's a dud. His shoulder's hurting pretty bad, but even that's not excuse enough for blurting that out. It's not like he told the Taliban anything but his name, rank, and serial number, and he was a damn sight more injured then. "You did what?" "Not the big roof. Porch roof." "Oh, well, that's so much. What the hell were you doing on the roof?" "Porch roof. So help me." John winces and eyes the top of the refrigerator, where random bottles of painkillers have been known to hang out before now. At the moment, he can only see a half-eaten bag of Doritos, a pair of pliers, a lopsided pot that Ada made at pottery class and gifted him because that's what she does, and 2 stray packets of takeout soy sauce. "We had a storm. Shingles got ripped." "And you decided you'd climb up there and..." "It's what I do. You know," John stops himself from shrugging before he regrets the movement, "for a living." "No doubt you didn't have any kind of safety harness. The tread on your boots is probably worn down to nothing by now, and did you think of rope? Rope tied to something? And a ladder that didn't..." "Oh my God, you fell off the roof!" John nods. "Yeah." "Are you hurt?" John's never sure how to answer that kind of question. Past experience has suggested he can figure out the answer by a reference to, "Can I still fly?" And okay, that still works. His shoulder's bummed out enough that he probably couldn't pull left on the cyclic stick, so yeah, I think. Shoulder. "Call the doctor's office right now. Right now!" That would have been the smart thing to do, John reckons. Apparently he's not that smart. "Okay." "Go, call, and then call me back, and I'm finding a flight and..." "You don't need to. Do not even think about, I'm not arguing about this. I'm a free man with a lot of credit and an impressive bank account. I can hire a jet if I have to. So go call the doctor and call me back and I will be there. Soon. Okay, yeah. Here, John thinks. Bye. And Rodney's gone, leaving John looking at the phone, wondering what the hell is going on that leaves him feeling hot and cold at the same time. It's probably related to his shoulder. The doctor pokes and prods him, does something to his shoulder that makes him see stars and swear in a language other than English, and sends him on his way with a script for some painkillers and an appointment for x-rays and an MRI. There's a text message from Rodney on his phone when he gets out to the truck. United, 6:45 p.m., and for some reason that makes John happy, even though it means he can't take the good drugs for hours yet, even though his shoulder's giving him chapter and verse and how much it dislikes that idea. He fills the prescription at Barton's drugstore and makes a mental note to never let Rodney see the way Stella Goodrich rolls her eyes when she sees he's done something requiring medical intervention again, mumbling to herself about his lack of self-preservation as she counts out his pills. Take these, she says as she passes the sacked pills across the counter. I mean it. They're not ornaments. John nods, wondering uncomfortably if she has spies who've been in his house. Yes, ma'am. He fishes for his wallet. I'm not kidding, John Shepherd. No, ma'am. 3775, and I am deadly serious. John hands over 220s, takes his change in the sack, and flees before Stella comes up with some sort of shift system for his neighbors to start in on adult babysitting. He throws the pills in the truck and heads to Mitch's for a medicinal beer, since there's not much else he can do with his time. Only Mitch eyes the way he's standing and gets the story out of him, refuses to serve him alcohol, and makes him drink a bunch of water. The fact that he acquiesces to this worries him more than the fact Mitch thinks he's a complete idiot, but Mitch orders him a burger, and that makes up for more or less everything. Always does. He takes the back roads to the airport as the afternoon fades into the gold of evening. Turns out that driving any distance makes his shoulder pinch and burn, and the vibrations of the truck along pavement that's seen better days have him grit his teeth against the pain. It's just plain dumb that he hurts this much from falling 14 feet. He's fallen clean out of the sky before now, and sure, the aftermath of that wasn't pretty, long or short term, but he feels like he ought to be better at bouncing back, at dusting himself off and filing the experience away to tell at the bar some night, details polished, delivery wry. Instead, he's trying to do math puzzles in his head, the mile markers transformed into simple equations, all to keep himself from doing something stupid, like driving off the road in a fit of self-pity. I'm suing the airlines for misrepresentation of service, Rodney says as he barrels across the airport lobby toward John. Cattle class would be more truthful than the utter rank stupidity of their lies about coach. He drops his duffel on the floor and hauls John into a hug, the kind of thing that's surprising but unexpectedly cool in John's estimation, except when he's just fallen off a roof. There's no way to adequately stifle his yelp. Rodney rocks back as if he's burned. God, sorry, sorry, it's just... He waves a hand, 2 paces safely away from John's body. You're in one piece. Yeah. This isn't new information for John. He's known he was in one piece this whole time, but there's something about hearing it come out of Rodney's mouth that makes him sag with relief. He's not sure if it's because he needed to have it confirmed, or if it's because Rodney's standing 2 paces away, solid and capable, and he doesn't have to navigate this whole stupid mess on his own anymore. Probably it's the former, sensible or not, because the latter is the sort of realization people have when they're fucked in the head in love with someone and destined to end up in a messy divorce, whereas he's just kind of fond of Rodney and likes it when they have sex. We probably can't have sex for a while, he mumbles. Rodney's eyes narrow. You're an idiot, he says. Did you take your drugs? No, John replies. I was driving. Well, good. You can give me the keys and take them right now. There's a flaw in this plan. The truck won't work for you. The truck will damn well work for me today if it knows the first thing about how to stay out of the scrap heap. Hey! Rodney rolls his eyes. Keys. When John hands them over, Rodney smiles happily, which John's missed seeing these last few days. He's forced to chew on his bottom lip at that and only moves toward the doors when Rodney huffs impatiently and kicks the back of his foot. He takes his drugs. Rodney fishes a bottle of water out of his bag and thrusts it at him in the parking lot, and they help with such speed he'd be startled if he weren't stoned. His shoulder's sore, but sitting in the passenger seat of a truck that's declared truce with Rodney's driving, he can slouch against the windows just so, taking a little heat off the joint. The corn whips by as they drive along the old Morse Road, a sweet burst of color making him hum in appreciation. The wildflowers out by Morrison's Pond winking purple-blue. It's a good evening, a clean day, washed new by the storm, for all its dumbass shingle-ripping power, and when they pull up at the farm, things smell damp and familiar, green and growing. And John's not just glad he's home, he's glad he's home with Rodney. Is there someone we can call about these? Rodney asks, after getting out of the truck, waving a hand toward the roof. Someone with safety harnesses and possibly a degree in subatomic acrobatics? Sure, John says, enjoying the pleasant sensation of being buffeted by pharmaceuticals. Hey! We should eat sandwiches. Rodney snorts a little, wanders over, and leans in to kiss him. A careful kiss that doesn't jolt John's bad shoulder at all. Sure, we can eat sandwiches. That is so awesome, John sighs happily, and he lets Rodney grab him by the wrist of his good arm and pull him up the porch stairs and into the cool quiet of the house. John hasn't considered the mechanics of sleeping with a bum shoulder. Hasn't considered much since they arrived home, to be honest, except how freaking fantastic his turkey sandwich is, and how quantifiably grabbable he finds Rodney's ass. But Rodney's ahead of him. Rodney's the kind of guy you want around if someone needs to think about mechanics. Rodney's hot and makes sandwiches and does something really trippy with a mattress and some pillows, and apparently, Rodney has decided this is going to solve lots of things. World hunger, stuff like that. See? I pulled the mattress down, Rodney explains, pointing helpfully. And there are pillows. Four. I have a fifth if you need it. So your shoulder can go in the gap, but your head will be supported. John blinks at his bed, which still looks like his bed, but now with holes and deconstructed pillow forts. Cool. He looks down at his bare feet, at his jean-clad legs, then back toward the bed. Fuck, he says, feeling suddenly despondent. There's so much to do before he can test the holes in the fort thing. Oh, spare me, Rodney mutters and makes short work of John's fly, his fingers moving so quickly that John snorts a little, chuckling when Rodney makes him step out of his jeans 1 foot at a time. You're good at that, John whispers as Rodney steers him toward the bed, divesting him of his t-shirt. Yes, yes, I'll be sure to make you show me your appreciation some other time, Rodney says, hovering as John lies down. Does it work? He tilts his head, squinting at the mattress. Comfortable? I am feeling no pain, John mumbles, happiness restored. Rodney pokes at his pillows and does something with the sheets. Yes, well, I've set the alarm to wake us when it's time for your next dose of painkillers, or you'll be singing quite a different tune, he offers. I can't believe you... Hey, John says, peering up at him through eyelids that are fast growing heavy. You should come to bed, too. Oh, well, yes, of course, just as soon as I've... John isn't sure what he's done with his face, but Rodney rolls his eyes and makes a gesture of surrender with his hands. Fine, fine. And although he disappears from John's line of vision for a while, the mattress soon dips and the familiar warmth of Rodney's bulk settles into John's right side. Better? John hums his approval, reaching out to pat Rodney's leg. Hi. Hi, Rodney whispers back. It's okay. You think? John nods, his eyes closing. Oh yeah, he offers, and lets the day pull him under. The radiographer, she should have a cooler name, John thinks. MRI Ninja... Magnetic resonance badass. It's possible he's still stoned out of his skull. Reads his scan, gives him the good news. No tear, just inflammation. Drugs and PT, he'll be fine. John's glad he doesn't need to go under the knife, even if past experience suggests there's nothing fun about physical therapy, and he watches with bemused patience as Rodney accepts all the paperwork and tucks it into his jacket pocket. Well, come on, Rodney says, standing and looking at John expectantly. Or did you want to move in here? That's dumb, John says, peeling himself out of his chair. It's a doctor's office. Radiologist's consulting room, actually, Rodney corrects and holds the door open for John while studying him intently. What's wrong? Huh? John almost trips over his own feet as he tries to undertake the twin acts of walking and head-turning at the same time. Something's wrong. You're all... Rodney waves a hand as he falls into step beside him. Pinched. John thinks about that. Very, very slowly. Pinched, he repeats at last. And for a man who's stoned, you're all... Rodney wrinkles his nose and balls his hand into fists. Huh. John looks at his hands. They're just hanging out the ends of his arms. Does it hurt, even with the drugs? Not really. John thinks about poking his shoulder to be sure, but that seems counterproductive. Pinched? The automatic doors to the parking ramp whoosh open in front of them, and John takes a moment to appreciate that. Whooshing doors are cool. Look, really, there's something... Rodney stops him, a hand on his good arm, and stands in front of him. Is there something I should know about hospitals or MRIs or, I don't know, medical treatment? Lack of medical treatment? The memory of Bagram rises up so swiftly John loses his breath, blinks against the stinging in his eyes, but the sensation's gone as quickly as it arrived. John scrubs a hand over his mouth, half expecting his lip to be split, just like it was that god-awful summer. But his mind gallops along readily enough as soon as he reassures himself he's whole. The idea that his past could be written on his face easily enough for Rodney to see is fucking mind-blowing. He might need to throw up, but then that could be the drugs as much as the fact that he let someone get this fucking close. I guess there was... That's not even important, because Jesus, Rodney knows him. Knows him so well he even seems to know what he doesn't know. John's head swims just a little, and he rubs his forehead, shuffles over to the wall beside the elevator, and leans against it. John? John doesn't really realize he's been studying Rodney's shoes until he looks up and sees Rodney's face, and the bare-naked concern there makes him stretch out a hand, crumple a little of Rodney's shirt sleeve between his fingers. Let's go home. Yeah, Rodney says softly. Okay. It's warm enough, sitting on the porch steps when they're back at the farm, for John to rue his black t-shirt, to wonder if he shouldn't have picked differently that morning, just to ease the slick heat against his skin. He hums his thanks when Rodney clatters out of the house and passes him a tall glass of water, drinks slowly as Rodney settles beside him, the half bag of Doritos worked open, his fingertips already orange with cheese dust. So, Rodney says. John pulls in a long breath, lets it go again. It's a perfect day, even with the heat. Corn standing tall, black-eyed Susans and coneflowers bending beneath every breath of wind. The sun on the barn lights it just the shade of red that lives at the back of John's ribs, the sweet shade of his best memories, and he fights against it, but he can't help but notice it's all the better for the scent of Rodney's aftershave, his sweat, the worn white patches on the knees of his jeans. Shit, he's in so much trouble. So, Rodney says again. Afghanistan, John manages. And that's obvious, stupidly so, but it still feels like a leap of trust to say it. Figured. John rubs a hand down his thigh, calming an itch at his palm. Didn't know I'd... Freak out, Rodney says, around a mouthful of Doritos. And don't give me that look. I mean, freak out in the very best way, of course, in your patented John Shepherd stoic son-of-a-gun fashion. I doubt that anyone but me would have noticed, and... He pauses, hand halfway back into the Doritos bag. Huh. Yeah, John says, and sets the glass down, because his hands have gone to shaking, and that's just plain embarrassing. Huh, Rodney says again. Yeah, John says, word clipped. Rodney plucks the Doritos bag from between them, drops it at his other side, and ignores it as it skitters down 2-3 steps. So all of this, you have a thing, whatever you call it, bad memory, experience, something went down, and you are absolutely telling me that story someday, because if I'm going to be accompanying you to hospitals, I'm going to need to know the full scope of your medical history, not just the parts that get written down in files, you understand? But considering that you're high, nuts, whatever, we can save that for another day, possibly a day when we can both consume vast quantities of alcohol, because that seems like the best way to handle pretty much anything, including that. But, he continues with an urgency that befuddles John, since there was no way he was going to try and get a word in edgewise, it's not just that, it's this, it's that I noticed, which, he swallows, I'll grant you, that's perhaps significant. John's body is staging some kind of revolt, against what, he's not exactly sure. But he can feel that there's a weakness in his knees that's not drug-related, but would sure as hell mean he'd fall ass over tea kettle if he tried to stand, and his hands are shaking. He has no idea what the hell to do, because whatever words he needs are probably rusting in the desert along with the hull of his bird, but there's something important happening here, and he doesn't want to miss it. He feels like he's possibly the most inept cluster of backward cells alive, but he reaches out all the same and picks up Rodney's hand in his own, laces their fingers, and God, it's probably the most graceless, awkward thing he's ever done. He wants to say, I like your skin, but there isn't a chance, not when there's a bead of sweat running down his spine that's only partially to do with the heat. So he rubs his thumb across the back of Rodney's hand and only looks up when Rodney makes a tiny noise that sounds not unlike, ugh. Come here, Rodney whispers at last, which is complicated since Rodney's already on his way over to him, shifting a little, leaning toward him, kissing him with just the barest brush of lips. For God's sake, we're hopeless. John closes his eyes, forehead pressed against Rodney's own. I called you, he offers, squeezing Rodney's hand. Yeah, you did, Rodney says, and he rests his fingertips against the line of John's jaw before he kisses him again. Kisses him like John might be worth a lot more than he's ever really considered. Kisses him like this isn't the most ridiculous confluence of events for two people to trip over in a dozen different lifetimes in a dozen different states. Thank you, he whispers eventually, lips swollen, eyes lit up the particular sharp blue that John's come to recognize as happiness. Shit, John says, and risks a smile, noses the stubble on Rodney's cheek, sits there and lets the crickets and cicadas fill up the empty spaces where he and Rodney aren't saying anything, not right now, the sun warming them into a stillness so right he can feel it in his bones. The end. A Little Outdoor Music. I wanna, John murmured, every word a burst of hot, humid breath against the shell of Rodney's ear. Rodney swallowed, trying with all his might to hold onto his higher brain functions, despite the fact that the world was shrinking to a mess of sensation. The barn against his back, rough and unyielding. John against his front, firm and warm, smelling of sun and sweat and trampled prairie grass. His own body thrumming with a need that it was apparently impossible to quench. "We are outside," he hissed, the venom he'd been aiming for, breaking into a low moan when John licked a long line up his neck. "Yeah," John agreed and pressed his knee between Rodney's, rocked forward to rub himself against Rodney's thigh. His hands came up to frame Rodney's face, thumbs resting just below Rodney's jaw. "I know." "Oomph," Rodney managed in the 0.67 seconds before John kissed him. A slow, wet, filthy kiss that spoke volumes about the kind of sex John was after. "Jesus," he whimpered as John nipped at his throat. "The neighbors!" John laughed, low and dirty, making Rodney's dick twitch inside his jeans. "No one's gonna see," he promised, hand slipping down Rodney's body, a thumb rubbing over one of Rodney's nipples through his t-shirt. "Just us." Rodney grabbed for John's ass, pulled him a fraction closer, thrust against him, frustrated and turned on, and worried he'd be giving Ada Gunderson an eyeful if he peeled John out of his clothes the way he wanted. "Can't possibly be sanitary," he protested, panting as John pushed his t-shirt up and over his head. "Bugs and bacteria and... oh, God." John had bent his head, was sucking at a nipple, and Rodney's jeans had never felt so fucking tight. "If you break my cock, I will..." John looked up at him mischievously, clever fingers working at Rodney's fly. "You'll..." "Just don't," Rodney said. "How about that? How about you don't break my cock, but instead you..." And then he shut up completely when the afternoon breeze hit his dick and he realized he was about to get blown. At not even 2 p.m., sunlight on his face, John on his knees, wetting his lips. "Mmm." John took his time, the bastard. Kept everything slow and slick and measured, until Rodney regained speech again and cursed him back to the dirt of Eden. Only then did he suck with a little more purpose, cheeks hollowing, eyelashes fluttering as he hummed happily at the back of his throat. And Rodney stopped listening for mosquitoes, rocking his hips towards John's waiting mouth, closed his eyes, and let his fingers card through John's thick, unruly hair, climbing bit by bit towards some noisy, wet, stupefying end. When he came, his knees buckled, and it was only John's arm across his hips that kept him in place. Only the heel of his own hand stuffed into his mouth that kept him from telegraphing his pleasure to every farmer in the county. "John," he mumbled brokenly, when John pulled back with a satisfied grin, wiping cum from the corner of his mouth. "Oh my God, if I have an allergic reaction to..." And he pushed John back into the grass, straddled him and kissed him into some trembling pliance, slid his hands into John's striped shorts, and jerked him off to a murmured litany of utterly filthy thoughts. And when John jerked beneath him, shuddering up into Rodney's hand, spurting gracelessly between Rodney's fingers, Rodney groaned again, gentled him through it, collapsed on top of his boyfriend's sweaty, tanned body with his ass half-hanging out of his jeans and sunburn prickling across his shoulders. "I'd like a rematch," he mumbled into John's shoulder, kissing the edge of his collarbone. Huh?" John said intelligently. "Blow you next time," Rodney offered contentedly, and waved an inquisitive grass stem away from his face. The end.